Ladies and gentlemen, it's the podcast with a K with Christian Corley, James McLean and Brian Terranova.
Available on Casterbus.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com and Audio Boo.
Last week we did a video cast, which was the culmination of a sort of chain of errors, a comedy of errors, if you like, that led up to the podcast being done. And it seems that another one kind of took over the podcast last week, as our poor viewer had to endure 70 minutes of my head, essentially, while you two, my apparent subordinates, were just little postage stamp boxes.
Postage stamp, little kit box.
Yeah, it's a shame we're going to put you on each of my shoulders, really, as a kind of good and bad conscience or something like that. So sorry, viewer, that happened. I wouldn't wish that on anyone, to be honest with you. It was completely unfortunate. I expected that when James and Brian spoke that they would occupy the space I was taking, as has happened with previous live podcasts. So
it was happening while we were recording, too, so I would have never expected that.
To not be
the case.
Yeah. So we'll try and make sure that doesn't happen again. On with the show, though, and I'm particularly delighted to read today. This is so hot off the press. We haven't even printed it on Castovers yet, or published it on Castovers, because obviously you don't print onto web pages, so that would make a mess of your monitor. That there's no split in Series 8. So we're getting 13 episodes of Peter Capaldi in one go.
As it should be.
As it should be. Exactly right, Terra Dude. Exactly right. I don't know what it means for, say, other shows. You know, I don't know. For instance, I don't know what it means for that. I don't care. We've got 13 episodes of Doctor Who on the trot. The only problem is you don't know when they're going to be on.
There was a mooting of August, I remember reading in one press release.
When you say mooted, you mean August was silenced or it was suggested?
It was suggested. Mm-hmm. It was mooted, not muted.
Right.
There's a slightly different vowel sound there.
Yes, I know, yes.
Good. Just checking you did, because it sounded for a second like you didn't. But no, I heard mooted August, which would be better than October.
Do you think?
Well, it's right. Sooner, isn't it?
It's what?
It's sooner. Well, I mean, if you've got 13...
Well, it is sooner, yes. And I appreciate that it's sooner. But I just want, you know... I remember, and, you know, I hark back to this. Our poor listeners probably heard me tell this story about a dozen times, but when I watched The Empty Child, I had to close the curtains in order to get some semblance of spookiness. And I was on holiday at the time. I was in, it wasn't a holiday, it was a weekend break at my cousin's wedding in Stansted. So I was just outside Stansted Forest. It was a very hot day. And I had to close the curtains to get something approaching an atmosphere.
I'm so glad that I muted you then. And let me point out that's mute, not moot. Tedious.
My
story.
Point is that scary stuff doesn't work in the summertime. It needs to be dark nights.
I don't know. One of my nicest memories of Doctor Who this since it's come back was I was on a vacation, a small vacation. It was one of those holiday homes. Holiday homes.
You're on a
vacation.
What's one of those? You're American all of a sudden. What's going on? Who are you?
It was a vacation.
What's this? A vacation?
Yes.
Oh, carry on then with your transatlantic speak. Go on.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry if there's a level of perhaps even a bit of classism here that we really posh Tory boys of the of the conservative ilk. Go on vacations. We don't do holidays like the oiks of the north, like yourself.
Yeah, right.
I went on vacation. To translate for Christian, I went on holiday.
You went on a bean.
Sorry, I better translate now for Brian. I went on vacation to Herefordshire, and it was a very remote cottage. I was there with my family and my girlfriend, and we were. It was a very small house. It was burningly hot. We had I think it was martinis or something, and we sat down and we watched Blink. And that was. I'm sorry. What's wrong with martini?
That wasn't a joke.
I don't think it was. Oh, I'm right, pretty okay, sure sorry. It was martini. Because remember, my girlfriend was extremely stingy with the amount of martini that she would put into a cap, into the glass, which was noted by everyone, right. May I add. But yeah, I sat and we watched Blink. Now, I can see what you mean. Watching Blink in the dark would be a far more imbuing more ambience. But my point being is that sometimes in the summer, you are relaxed. It's warmer. It hasn't gone dark so quickly. So in a sense, everything feels a little more less stress-free as sometimes that the winter feels, which can feel quite enclosed and inhibiting. And watching Doctor in that sort of atmosphere was quite gentle, and it was nice. So while I agree with you don't get the atmosphere, sometimes I think in the summer people are a little more chilled out, so you enjoy a program more. My strongest memory of enjoying Doctor Who in this was watching Blink in this remote part of Hereford. So yes, watching Blink in the summer I found was a very relaxing, most memorable Doctor Who experience. So I counter
okay.
your point, and I'd say August isn't so bad, because I do think it's quite important to capitalize on the Capaldi interest as well. So I think a little earlier is better from that point of view as well. And we do get the majority of it in the winter still with 13 episodes. Well,
yeah.
Half of it.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I don't think it'll be early August. I think it'll be late.
Well, hopefully, yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, it's a fair point. It might be like the last weekend. It might be the bank holiday weekend kick off.
I'd have thought so.
Wouldn't it? Yeah.
Because they're right. going to want to try and lead it up to Christmas, aren't they, for the Christmas ones?
So. One would think so, yes.
One would think so, yes.
One would hope so, indeed.
Indeed.
Yes. Now, the time of the Doctor, I've got that right, haven't I? Because we've had the...
It is, yes.
We've had kind of the day of the Doctor.
Name of the
Doctor.
The
night of the Doctor and the name of the Doctor.
The clock of the Doctor.
We haven't had the shoe size of the Doctor yet, have we? I think that's probably coming next.
It is getting a bit tedious, isn't it?
Yes, I suppose almost it's like of so, the yeah. Daleks. But we will leave that for a moment. Maybe Moffat's on a single-handed journey to redress the balance of all the of the Daleks titles.
You know, well, this should have been Resurrection of the Doctor, then, or Remembrance of the Doctor.
Mm.
Could have been Genesis of the Doctor.
Could have been Genesis.
Destiny of the Doctor. Oh, we've had that.
Yeah, Remembrance of the Doctor.
Yeah, Remembrance of the Doctor.
Attack of the Doctor. No.
Attack of the Planet of the Doctor. I'm surprised we haven't had that. It could be that one as well. In fact, most of these phrases would probably be quite relevant for this Doctor episode. Right,
possibly, yes. Anyhow, so some new images were released on Saturday by the BBC, in which, and again, going back to the thing about the rumours, and the spoilers, I should say, they kind of corroborate what was released by the newspapers the other day. But specifically, we've got a wooden Cyberman in that image gallery, among other interesting things. What do you think of Woody?
Woody what?
I think...
Woody Sibes.
Woody Sibes what?
That's his name, I've just decided. Woody Sibes. The wooden Cyberman. It's an interesting concept, isn't it?
Is it?
Is it?
It's an interesting concept. I'm not saying that it's right for the Cyberman or anything like that. I'm saying it's an interesting thing to do with the Cybermen.
It's like having a metal crinoid.
It is a bit, isn't it? In some ways. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Oh, you know, it's a bit. Yeah.
A wooden
I'm
person.
I'm sure it will have some reasoning. That will hopefully make sense at the time, but we already had kind of wooden creatures in one of the last Christmas episodes, the Narnia one.
Yeah.
So maybe it has links to that. Maybe it's something completely new. Who knows? But if it's something that the Cybermen thought was a good idea, I think that's rather silly. I doubt that'll be the case. But now it seems to me like somebody said, hey, wouldn't a wooden Cyberman look cool? And somebody else said, yeah. And then they said, let's do it. It looks neat. It's a neat visual, but I just hope it has something more in the story rather than just, hey, look, it's a wooden Cyberman.
Burn it!
Right! Which I'm sure it probably will. It probably will, but, you know, hey, it's Moffat.
I think, I'm trying to avoid the spoilers a little more this time. I mean, I've gone through the screen caps. Uh-huh. No, I went through the screen caps because, you know, I knew we'd be talking about it.
Yeah.
But one of my friends who has looked at the spoilers said that she thought it sounded terrible. So in a sense, I'm trying to avoid too much knowledge of it. No, that doesn't mean we can't talk about it here. But I'm saying, you know, we went and I watched the trailers for the whatever the Doctor, the episode was. We had Day of the Doctor. And I felt that sort of spoilt it. Well, if I'd seen the screen caps, it probably wouldn't have spoilt it as much.
Yeah.
So I've avoided actually watching the trailers, and I'm actually looking at the screen caps. And the screen caps, it looks all right, but it doesn't blow me away. Given, you know, this is a big ending, it, I don't know. It's a sort of standard sort of Christmassy streets again, and it's, I don't know, there's a feel of rigmarole here.
Do you think?
I'm hoping basically like Tenant's Last Story, that while it has maybe a Christmassy kind of tone going on in it, more so than Tenant's Last Story, Tenant, they kind of just mentioned that it was Christmas. I'm hoping that they don't dwell on the lighter tone, the lighter aspect, the way they did with the past three Christmas episodes that Moff did, even though I know Clara died in one of them, I still felt that they were all a little too offbeat for a Doctor Who story for me. So I'm hoping that since this one will deal with, you know, Smith's final episode and his demise, I'm hoping that we get a proper story out of it rather than you know, it's Christmas, let's be lighter.
Okay,
know?
The Day of the Doctor. Did you, or do you recall seeing the Doctor's eyes looking very old?
No.
You'd have to tell me what scene, because I don't know.
It was quite early on, I think.
That one close-up shot of his
eye,
you mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, I was wondering whether that might be a foreshadowing of this episode.
Well, they did show him in that, like, when they showed that, they showed him in, like, some kind of catacomb or something like that, some like, which I had thought was just what was happening later on in the story, but they did kind of have a flashback or a flash forward there to something that had Smith in it that didn't relate the rest of the way through. So it is possible that it's all connected. I mean, it makes sense that it would be all connected.
It's funny because, you know, the original teaser seemed to really be pushing the point of it being, you know, quite a big epic story, and yet the clips of the trailer, it seems actually quite, I wouldn't dare say pedestrian, as I seem to say a lot, but it does seem a little more sort of, it doesn't carry that sort of enthrall that I found that the original teaser had. You know, Trenzalore and you know, the Weeping Angels, everything seemed to be far more sort of, you know, this is a big final story, while the trailer itself looked a bit, I don't know, more focused on the Christmas sort of factor. There's many, lots of snow shots.
Well, maybe they don't want to give anything away just so as not to spoil it for you personally.
Well, maybe so, which is a very nice gesture on their part, I guess. But I don't know.
I'm also hoping, based on the trailer, that we don't have kind of like the end of Series 5 again. You know, too many villains going on for no reason. Essentially,
yeah.
Which, you know, and I'll be honest, I liked that story. I liked the end of Series 5. I did think having all of the villains that they had there kind of didn't really make sense, but I didn't mind it on the whole. However, it just didn't work perfectly. And I just think that showing as many as they're showing already, I'm hoping there's a good reasoning for it. And maybe they're not all together. Maybe we're getting to see, like, him preparing for his last day or something. And these are all unrelated events.
Well, maybe. There's a reason for him using all that. Maybe it links in, because, you know, we've still got to get to the end of why the TARDIS blew up. So perhaps, because that happened in the same story, perhaps that's a clever link that he's used to remind us of that story.
And supposedly he is answering a lot of questions by his own admission, so we'll see if that's that holds up well.
Yeah.
But it does seem like there's a hell of a lot there.
Yeah.
And it is only 60 minutes again. And I find one of the hardest things I find with a lot of Moffat stuff is that, and we spoke about this before, is he tends to do these really large superfluous setups to episodes where you don't really give a damn about the setup because the episode's quite big. Like, for instance, Name of the Doctor. You want to know what's going on with the Doctor. You want to know what this big secret is. And you spend 10 minutes sitting around a very clever seance idea. But it's just, you don't want it at that point. You want to be finding out what the hell's going on with the Doctor. And he did that a little with Day of the Doctor. And while I think it's quite a nice scene, you know, her going to the TARDIS and the TARDIS being lifted to UNIT, there is a part of me which is saying that would be a really good scene in another story. But really, we just want to get down to what this is all about. And I'm a bit worried with this one, whether there's a bit of that again, whether there's going to be all the images we're seeing, stuff like, yeah, they all be quite good another episode, but this is his final episode. You know, where's the focus here? I want to see the focus on that. That's what I want to watch.
Well, I think I do agree with you. I think in terms of Day of the Doctor, we need to treat it for what it is, which is, it is a TV movie, isn't it, essentially?
Yes.
So I do think we need to, I do agree with you, but I think we should excuse it because it does have those long opening titles, you know, the credits on the screen and the long panoramic shots. It's very Sherlock in its execution, that segment as well.
It is, yes.
So I think we need to be a little kinder to it.
I don't think you have to be a little kinder to it.
Okay, all right, fine enough. All right.
I mean, I like, as I say, I think it's a good story. I think it's a good show. But yeah. I'm just going by what I was feeling at the time rather than whether I think it was the right thing to do, because I know a lot of kids who loved it. So, you know, I'm not saying it was wrong, but for me, I was kind of feeling this is in the wrong place. I'd like, really, this story, I want you to just get straight in there and then we can enjoy as much of it as we can.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I mean, maybe, as you say, that's a bit unfair. And he does seem to do this occasionally and seems to sort of flop around on things which don't feel quite essential and then really truncate everything which is. And I kind of hope he's got a better balance for this Christmas one. I have a horrible feeling there isn't. I think it's going to be a horrible mash between quite a sort of big finale and the Christmas episode. And the Christmas episode's not going to sit well with the pressure of the big finale. So, well, I'll just have to wait and see in 3 weeks or so. But
yeah. No, I agree with what you're saying there, though. It does already start to have that feel, which I just keep hoping, like I said, that they'll change pace, and or rather that it won't be what it looks like, and it'll be more like Tennant's last story, where, you know, Christmas is mentioned, but it's just to say, hey, it's Christmas time. But there is a lot going on that does start to have that sinking feeling sit in, especially when, you know, Moff's at the helm and he has a history of doing that, you know. So hopefully he can break the mold, because, you know, like I was saying, with the name of the Doctor and the day of the Doctor, it seemed like Moff was really, like, finally, you know, hitting the ground running. And I really enjoyed Smith and I really enjoyed Moffat, and those two stories were great. And I'm really hoping that Smith can go out on a bang. That is well worth it. But we'll see. It's very easy to do something great and then go back into your complacent setting.
Okay, do you think more is less, though? I mean, that's the other concern I have, which we've all said, is that there is a hell of a lot of enemies in that last story. And for one episode, does it ever really work? I mean, as you pointed out, the Big Bang as being, Pandora opens being an example. And I'm not quite sure it does, because it's a bit like Spider-Man 3, isn't it? You deliver, or pretty much any superhero past the first movie, and suddenly they start piling on the villains, and it never seems to do anyone any justice.
I'd prefer one villain, maybe two, to make it something slightly more interesting. But I'd prefer, you know. We already had a couple of stories named the Doctor, you know, and they were all about him, and it really does kind of need to be about him. But I actually just recently watched Logopolis again, and it was an interesting story because it really showed me something about season 18 that I hadn't really considered before, and that's how interconnected it all is. You know, you get to Logopolis and you find out that the Logopolitans basically created the CVEs. Thank you. That brought them to create the E-Space trilogy. And you know, there's lots of things that's just kind of linked within there. And then in the beginning of the story, Tom Baker gets a glimpse that his end is coming, which was very much the same thing that happened to David Tennant. He got nods that his end was coming.
It's arguably a stronger arc than Bad Wolf, actually, season 18, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
well, that's what I was going to say. It's much more like how Russell used to do arcs than how Moffat did arcs. Which I found very interesting, like that it was there, because it wasn't. Moffat's arcs are kind of, in a sense, maybe more so like The Key to Time, where they're in your face. Only difference is that his arcs tend to kind of go nowhere. But I was very impressed with it, and I thought it was great. And what was nice about it was that the Doctor focused on the task at hand. He had to save the universe. He had to save, you know, he tried to in a sense save himself by fixing the TARDIS so that he wasn't quite as an easy target. With it looking the way that it was, but for the most part he was focusing on the task at hand, but knew that his end was coming. And I think that's great, because it really says a lot about the character. Rather than I've got to hide or run from my own impending death, you know, I've got to do what I do here. And I think that would be great if they did that kind of focus with Smith, where there's just something so great and so big going on, and he knows that, you know, this could be his end, but who cares, you know, I've got to do this needs to be done. And I'm hoping it's something more along those lines, because I was really taken with how good Logopolis was in that respect.
Well, End of Time did a similar sort of thing, and that worked for the same reasons. It gave a sort of a very strong impetus and a question. It wasn't quite as subtle as Logopolis. But then you have that very good end scene with the Doctor, which is what I've always said is where I think you know, while I think Moffat is a very clever structural writer, I was watching a couple of his mini episodes recently, even just down to the one where the TARDIS lands in on itself, and there's some very clever ideas there. What struck me with Davis was the things like that last moment with Tennant, where he starts having a shout at Wilf. You know, the frustration and anger that he knows he's going to have to go ahead and he's going to have to do what he has to do and he doesn't want to. And the outburst was so very well written, was so very character thought out, that how a character would genuinely react and not a TV character would react. And right. that was very brilliant. And I he's got a lot to live up to, Moffat. He's got a lot. That Tennant episode, while End of Time did have its bits where it too floated and felt a bit, get on with it. The ending with Tennant, that specific scene was very, very powerful. And I'm wondering how Moffat's going to have to try and, not necessarily top it, but offer something that's different, but to the core of the characters as well.
There's another interesting point there, too, is that Tennant's last story was a two-parter. They gave him the time, basically, to tell a proper story for both respects, to tell a good story for the viewers watching and also to tell a great story for the Doctor departing. Yeah. And, you know, having Smith only in a 60-minute episode with, so far, as far as we know, what, 3 or 4 different villains in it, it does seem like he's treading down the too much category, the biting off more than he can chew type thing. And I hope he can pull it together. Like I said, he's been doing some great stuff lately, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, of course, but it does seem like the focus is going to be scattered, like you're saying, and that does really concern me.
I still think that Moffat has always had a bit of an issue of having to try and top what's gone before. And like the mistake that so many movies make, that they think to top something, you add more. Yeah, I just hope he doesn't go down that route of thinking that he needs to put in more, because I think it will make it less when when you've got such a very strong, simple finale, inevitable finale to the episode. You know, in a sort of weird way, it can almost write itself without you having to overdo it.
And one of the things that I think Smith is absolutely brilliant at is the serious kind of heartfelt tender moments, as well as the intense, like when all the chips are down, rather than do that, you know, oh shoot, this happens, be silly and nutso, you know, he gets very serious and very intense and very strong in those moments. And I think that, you know, for him, for his last story, for coming to the end, knowing you've gotten over generations left, or maybe he knows something that we don't know, I really think Smith can really shine so long as Moffat allows that. And it just seems like Moffat might be burying that, which is a big concern, because, you know, I always cite that while Dinosaurs on a Spaceship is probably one of the worst stories that he'd done, that moment with Smith and Solomon together in his chamber, you know, when he's trying to fix his legs or whatever, Smith sits down and has this conversation with him with this intensity that was just brilliant. And I hadn't seen that since series 6, when he tells River, Rory, and Amy, you know, don't ever lie to me. Don't ever think you're smart enough to lie to me. You know, like those are the things that he does well. And then, of course, the mention of Trenzalore, which was one of the only truly good moments of The Name of the Doctor in my mind, was watching Smith's reaction to just the name Trenzalore. Those are the things that I really want to see in his final story. I really want to see him come up against a lot of hardships, and it doesn't have to be just relating to his own demise. There's got to be some good things in there, some powerful stuff that make this trip really worthwhile and intense for him in the end. I would love to see that.
Okay. But it seems to me as they've learned that Smith needs to have those intense moments, because when it started, I got the feeling that Moffat was really trying to take the show back to its classic roots and have a Doctor which didn't have the angst. But as soon as you don't have the angst, you don't have the depth, you lose something when you've got a good actor, that he's got nothing, he hasn't got as much to play with, and you don't get those moments. And, you know, we were kind of promised when Smith came in that he would be a sort of a mixture. He could be lots of fun, and then he could be really, you know, quite suddenly changed into a very broody person. And he never really did till about series 6, series 7. Yeah. I kind of hope they've learned that you do need, you know, the drama of today is the drama of today for good reasons. And people who just think it's all about, you know, as soon as a character is dramatic, that it's all emo, as the famous phrase is, loses the depth.
Brian Emo.
Brian Emo, yes. Very good. Very good. You'd lose Brian Eno, musician. Yeah. Brian Emo.
Oh, right.
Yeah. You can lose something. So, yeah, I agree. Sorry. You were trying to segue there, Christian. I
that's a podcast. That's all
it's
doing.
Nothing could make up for my face.
Mute and Moot is so pertinent today, isn't it?
Just? Yeah. So, Doctor Who Legacy is a new Doctor Who video game for mobile phones. It's currently available on Android and iPhone, iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad. And it's basically a puzzle game with RPG elements, and it's turning out to be surprisingly popular. You know, we've had a lot of Doctor Who games over the years. Certainly since the series came back, we've had a lot in the old times. And, you know, our next Casterbis magazine is dedicated to Doctor Who video games. So much so that we're a little bit behind. And now we're going to have to extend it even more in order to include some content on Doctor Who Legacy. I was fortunate enough to speak to the development leads last week. So we'll just move over to that interview right now. I'm talking to Lee and Sue, aren't I? Is that right?
Yes.
Can you tell me a bit about how the game came about? Was it another game that you can transfer the idea from onto Doctor Who? How did that happen?
Let's have a look. Susan and I sat down in January and we started talking about what we wanted to do this year. We decided we wanted to make a mobile game, our first mobile game. We've made DS games together before. We've made puzzle games together before as well. And we wanted to maybe revisit that. We're a huge gem game fans. We made a game called Puzzle Kingdoms years ago. So when we hit the beginning of the year, we were talking about mobile and maybe doing a puzzle game, and then we started talking to the BBC because we've, over the years, we've made a few different IP-based games based on somebody else's world, and we really enjoy doing them because we only pick ones we really, really, really love. So we started talking to the BBC about Sherlock, actually, first of all. And then the discussion moved on to Doctor Who, and we thought, well, you know, maybe we'll do this puzzle game we want to do is wrapped in Doctor Who because we love Doctor Who and we can do a really faithful game by fans for fans, and that was basically the pitch to the BBC.
Okay.
So we started pitching that in the beginning of March, I think, to the BBC, very beginning of March, and the game was up and running in production within about 45 days, and then of course we released just now.
Excellent. Now, I was involved in the early stages of the development of a potential Doctor Who game about 12 months ago, just under 12 months ago. And there was a kind of... Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? And we found that there might be a stumbling block with BBC Wales, and in particular, whether or not it would be approved by the people in charge. So did Stephen Moffat have any say? Did he have a go of it? Did he say, this is great, this is bad, or did he not get involved at all?
Yeah, they've been involved and supportive every step of the way. You know, our relationship started, you know, we're based out of Los Angeles, and there's a BBC Games group here, Paul Joffe and some others, and that's who we originally did the deal with. They've since moved all of that to the UK, and so now we deal straight on with the UK group. But we have really good contact with them. Our producer Peter at the BBC talks hourly on our behalf to the brand. So everyone's had sign off on it. They've all had a look at the art. They've been really supportive of the art style since the very beginning. The thing we've noticed working with the BBC, the wonderful thing is that it's just so obvious how passionate they all are about their franchise. And so everyone really seems to have, you know, the interest of the property in mind. You know, there haven't been a lot of egos involved. It's really been about, you know, what's best for the property, what's best for the game.
Okay. Now, you've got loads of great reviews. I've just been, checked the Google Play page because I've not been there for about 3 days. And I noticed you've got the Casterbis review on, quote from the Casterbis review, and lots of others. And it's like what we said. Is this the title to restore Doctor Who's video gaming fortunes? We think it might be. The reaction's been really good. You must be really pleased with that.
Oh, we are. Yeah, we're thrilled. You know, at the beginning of the project, we said, you know, our goals were we wanted to make the most faithful Doctor Who game, you know, we possibly could, and we wanted it to be the broadest one that could build, you know, we could build over time, we launch and keep supporting, and we go backwards through as much of the canon as we could, and we're thrilled that fans love this, because, you know, we put a lot of our heart and soul into this over the last 8-9 months to make it as detailed and as you know, as loving to the show as possible. So, yeah, it really warms our hearts when we have things like that.
And we've really, I hope, and I think fans feel that we're going the extra mile to really listen to everybody. We already are pushing 10,000 followers on Facebook over the last week.
Yeah.
And it's become a very active community, answering each other's questions, and videos are cropping up with guides and walkthroughs and stuff. So people seem to be really excited just about the fact that, you know, it's becoming apparent that we really care, that we're doing a lot of cool stuff for the community, that we're not just trying to find a way to make a buck from everybody, and that it's, you know, that what's most important to us, like Lee said, is that it's seen as a faithful game to the show, that it's just coming from a lot of love, that we're not in any way trying to, to copy anything or take advantage of anybody. This is just a game that we want to play, and we hope they do too.
Now, the interesting thing about it as well is that it's free and there's no ads in there.
Correct.
So is
our approach to that was really basic. It was sort of if we were building the game we wanted to play. So at every step we said, would we want this in this game if we were just playing it? So things like ads came up, and we really didn't want to.
Sure.
We really hoped that we could find another way. And things like having an energy meter in the game, we found a bit absurd, because we played the game in you know, stints, stops, and, you know, goes, and one night we want to sit down for 3 hours and play the game, but you can't if somebody's influenced an energy meter. And we felt that wasn't something we wanted other fans of Doctor Who like ourselves to ever go through, the idea that, oh, I want to play a bit more, but I have to pay for more energy. We thought that was a bit silly. So we removed that. So we try to really... One review called it the most moral free-to-play game out there. We really try to make a game where you could legitimately play through every single piece of content we ever released for free. It's apart from restarting levels, which you can always grind and get a better team and get through that, there's nothing you really have to pay for in the game. So we really try to make a really fair experience, because we couldn't... I don't think we could live with ourselves if we made a Doctor Who game which wasn't fair to other Whovians like ourselves.
Right.
Is the bottom line.
Okay. Now, am I right in saying that it's available on Android and iOS at the moment?
Correct.
Okay. Is there any plans for Windows 8, Windows Phone 8, or Xbox Live?
We're getting asked a lot about Windows Phone, you know, and we've reached out to Microsoft and have talked to them about it. You know, we've done Xbox games in the past. You know, Lee and I have a long history in consoles, so we have a great relationship with them. And I'm thinking about it. You know, we wanted to get to market first and get it out there on sort of the two biggest platforms, and now we're trying to figure out what else makes sense. I mean, we do plan to do a browser version of it, which is not difficult for us. It's built in Unity, so we're really just trying to decide how we want to launch that. But that'll be coming, definitely. Beyond that, looking at Windows Phone, Amazon's going to be launching soon for Kindle users, and we're talking to Sony as well about potential with things like PSN.
Did you have any early plans to go with Windows Phone? Because the thing about Windows Phone is, because of Nokia, it's a lot bigger in the UK and parts of Europe than it is in, like, the United States.
We would definitely like to. You know, it really became for the first launch, you know, where we could devote the limited you know, resources of an indie developer to get to market. So there was really just that. Yeah. I mean, like I said, you know, we're certainly fans of Windows platform. We love competition, and so we certainly love that they're there and would love to support that. And I have to say, you know, we do get a lot of requests, both through support and through Facebook. We get a lot of questions about when is it coming to Windows Phone. So, you know, we're certainly paying attention to that and trying to figure that out.
Okay, that's cool. Now, I'm interested in... I'm kind of embarrassed to say I haven't got that far through the game. I've only picked up the 10th Doctor and Porridge and Rory. Going forward, are you going to go right back to the first Doctor as a character in there?
That was our original pitch. We said to the BBC we wanted to create a game where we could start in the present and then start releasing content continually backwards,
and
as far as we could go, as far as the fans want us to go, essentially. So we decided to launch with seasons, the most recent two, 7 and 6. And that's around 25 hours of gameplay in there. And then we're going to start rolling out season 5 in early January, we hope. And then through December right now, we're doing this advent calendar. So we're releasing a bunch of new levels this month and free characters. We put out K9 a couple of days ago and some new Vastron Jenny outfits. So we plan to release content really continually as we go, and just staged around going backwards to the timeline of the Doctor.
Yeah, it won't necessarily all be in, like, big releases, like, here's all of Season 7, because I think people just want to be able to be continually engaged and keep playing stuff. So it'll probably start coming out in sort of smaller tranches of episodes and stuff so that people can see where we're going along the way as opposed to having to wait for a whole season now that we're live. And we're looking at other modes and other things that we can include, other ways of playing with the content, too. So all of that's hopefully coming after the holidays.
Okay, that'll be fun. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to speak to you is because we've been going for a few years now, and last year it was earlier this year we released a print version of our website, but basically a spin-off fanzine, and we're doing a second issue which is purely about Doctor Who video games, going all the way back to Doctor Who and the Mind of Terror and all those
things. That's amazing.
Yeah, so it's taken quite a bit of work and a lot of gameplay and a lot of fist smashing on desks with emulators and things. And have you played any of the old Doctor Who games? Do you have any memories of them, or did you find them difficult or a letdown in any way?
I haven't. That's not fair. I really haven't played much. I played a little bit of the browser Worlds in Time.
Yeah, I did
that. Right. Look. And I jumped into a couple of other ones recently, like Mazes of Time. But when I'm working on a game, I really don't like to say anything close to it once I started the design documentation. That includes, you know, even in the same world. We really want to just bring our interpretation of the whole thing, you know. So the short answer is not really. I really can't tell
you. You must have been aware that previous games hadn't, and I'm not necessarily talking about recent ones, because, I mean, there's another one on Android. There's the one that goes, I've forgotten the name of it now. I've got it.
The Say What You See one.
No, that's the one that came out last week. No, there's the other one that came out last year or the year before, which I'll just... I should know what it's called. No, it just doesn't. Well, I've got the thing behind me anyway, the App Gear game. So you've got this gun that you mount your iPhone or your Android.
Oh, it's the gun. It's shooting Weeping Angels.
Cleric Wars, yeah. Now, that is a good game on a good device. If your device isn't... I'm not sure what it's like on the iPhone. If you've got kind of a middling Android, it can be a bit jerky and sticky. But on a high-end Android, it's a really good game. But I was more interested in what... You must have been aware that some of the older games, like going back, you know, we're talking like a 30-year gaming history, weren't that good or had been a letdown in some way. That's the kind of thing I was getting.
I didn't know that it had a bit of a history of not being necessarily the best games in the world. And I remember, I have a memory of playing something on like a Spectrum or a Commodore back in the day. Back in the day when there were a lot of licensed IP Transformer games out there. Not lots and lots of knowledge of the space of Doctor Who games. So.
Okay.
But something I should jump into. I did play the Google Doodle all the way through when it launched.
Well, that was good, wasn't it? Some people considered that to be the best Doctor Who game ever before Legacy was released.
Right on top of each other, yeah. Yeah, no, I thought that was really neat. We had no idea it was coming, and, you know, we obviously know Google World because we're on Android, so that was...
Okay, excellent. Well, thanks for taking the time to speak to me.
All right, thank you.
Take care.
You too. Bye. Bye-bye. So, have either of you two guys played Doctor Who Legacy? Or are you aware of it?
Well, I'm aware of it because I read the Casterbris magazine, but my Android phone seems to be... it doesn't seem to be able to support it.
Oh, right.
Which is a bit of a change. So hopefully next year when I go for my upgrade, I'll get someone that will.
Are you going to be upgraded?
Tend to be, don't you, when it comes up to you.
Sorry, it was a Cyberman, Joe. It doesn't matter.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yes, I suppose so. 2006, 2012, so what, six years out? Never mind.
It's not 40 this week.
I know it is, isn't it? Is your mic on? Do a quick test. It might be on mute. And strangely enough, the only other thing I could have to play it on would be the... my Kindle, but it's not on Amazon Marketplace.
It's coming on Kindle, apparently. So they're also planning on a browser version, which I imagine will be played through Facebook.
I was going to suggest, apart from using an app?
Our listener knows this already because they've just listened to the interview in which he's mentioned. So.
Right, okay.
Yeah, that interview. Wow, what a good one.
It's kind of scary, isn't it, to know that the viewer knows more than we do?
Yes. Listener, it's listener this week.
I feel a little left out.
You feel left out?
Yeah.
I feel left out.
maybe the
thanks for an advance on that interview.
Yeah, I meant to send it over, but I've had a bad weekend, which following that phone call earlier on, seems to be about to get worse. We'll not worry about that now. Have you played it, or are you aware of it?
Me?
Yes, you.
I am aware of it, mainly because I saw it advertised, and I saw that they used the same name that I'm using on my Doctor Who fan film series.
Well,
thanks, guys.
They must really, really like your fan film series.
They must love the fan films. I will admit, though, I'm not really a big gamer. I don't really get any kind of thrill out of playing games, so I have not played it. The last Doctor Who game that I played was actually the Google game that they which I have to say was extremely fun, but I have not played Legacy, so I know of it. I do not know of how fun it is.
Okay then. We've got an article coming on Castorbis this week, which may be live by the time you hear this, dear listener, which looks at how this game is kind of taking up a life of its own. It's got a subreddit dedicated to it. Pretty sure No.2Gamers had a subreddit dedicated to it. There's a fair chance, I suppose, that the last console game, whose name completely escapes me at the moment,
Eternity Clock.
Yes, thanks, James. Chance that's possibly got a subreddit dedicated to it. But for a Dota 2 mobile game to have a subreddit dedicated to it is pretty impressive. And it's got a good community. It's got a community spirit in the way that Worlds in Time seem to have failed. And given that was an MMO, irony. 101, really. Let us move on to let's redress the balance. Brian Terranova, our cod player, play with fish. Brian Terranova, our cosplayer and prop purchaser and builder extraordinaire, has got his hands on a new sonic screwdriver, haven't you?
A couple. Well, technically a new. And then some upgrading that I've done myself to some of my older ones. So there you go.
Right.
Yeah.
So how did this work about?
Well, I collect props, so I bought it.
You bought it. Where did you buy it?
That's pretty boring.
Right on Amazon?
That story, isn't it? Let me enhance that for you.
Please do.
No, honestly, the one probably that the most recent one that I have gotten, which is probably one of the most worthwhile mentions, is actually the Ninth Doctor version. Which is known as the Aztec, based on the company that originally made it for the TV show. And the one that I have is actually by the Celestial Toy Store, who did a lot of research. Right? I know. Cool, right? But what I have to say is you know, when the new series came about, by the point that started airing, I had already had a Tom Baker Sonic, which was my holy grail, if you will. Okay, and I've since upgraded that and actually just recently did some new upgrades to that. But that was my holy grail. And from there, it was like, well, I've got the thing. I've got the most sought-after piece that I've ever wanted. Where to now? Then the new series came about, and when Christopher Eccleston came on screen with that new Sonic screwdriver, I fell in love with it. I just thought it was a fantastic piece. And trying to get a replica of that ever since then, ever since 2005, has been ridiculous. They've made toys which were too large and didn't have the right activation, which essentially, you know, his had a stationary activation button, whereas Tennant's, the activation button slid up and down with a thumb slider that would raise the emitter head. You just couldn't get one. And then finally, you know, just last year, the Celestial Toy Store advertised that he was finally making this particular Aztec version with a stationary button, and it came out earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a gorgeous piece. I mean, I'll have to send you some pictures, I guess, for the podcast or so. But it's well worthwhile. It's all aluminum. It uses the original paint that was used on the handle for the Christopher Eccleston version. And they went ahead and they enhanced it to have a sound module, which sounds exactly like the show. It's brilliant. So, like, the real one that Eccleston used on the show didn't have any sound. Eccleston or Tennant, because obviously they want to put that all in post. But as a cosplayer, as a prop collector, that says a whole hell of a lot to have a sound module. It's just a gorgeous piece. But, I mean, measurement for measurement, comparing this with photos that have been floating around since 2005 and better ones that have come since, I got to hand it to the Celestial Toy Store. Between this and I also have a 10th Doctor version from him, they are spot-on replicas. They are gorgeous. Any comments, questions that you would like to ask?
How easy are they to make? I mean, do these people? I'm assuming the prices represent how difficult they are to construct.
Generally, yes.
Yeah.
One of the places that I generally get the replicas is on the RPF, therpf.com, which is a replica prop forum. Communities like there and places like Gallifrey Base, there are prop collectors, prop makers who generally someone will go on and say, hey, check it out. I've made a replica of the Fourth Doctor Sonic Screwdriver. And then you have a million people hop on that guy's page rather than say, wow, what a beautiful job you did. Everybody goes, are you doing a run? You know, that it's like let's compliment the guy first a little bit. Let's say what a great job you've done, because you've really done some great work. Just like, you know, like I said with the Celestial Toy Store, you know. But what happens is the more people that you have pitching in to help pay for them, the cheaper that they can be to replicate. However, in the case of something like the 9th, 10th, and 11th Dr. Sonics, they're very intricate pieces. So there's a lot of details to them. There's a lot of moving parts to them. And of course, he does sound modules to them. So the price will reflect how difficult that they are to make. The thing is there's also a lot of research that has to go into it. Like, for instance, the Fourth Doctor Sonic Screwdriver, we only ever had screen captures that we could say of episodes to kind of get an idea of the size and the shape and the dimensions of this thing. Because the prop, as you know, was supposedly lifted from John Nathan Turner's desk, so no one's ever been able to have proper pictures of it to actually do any true research on it. Whereas the new series, you know, they take continuity pictures, they take behind-the-scenes photos for their own archiving that somehow makes it into the hands, into the fan community, and you can get a lot of good measurements from those, as well as some people have actually seen the real props and been able to measure the real props to get proper exacting measurements, and which happens to be the case here of some of the Sonic Screwdrivers that Celestial Toy Store makes. So they are very detailed. You have to generally let a CNC machine them or just hand lathe some parts. The paint job, for instance, on the Tenant Sonic Screwdriver alone is ridiculous, because it's a couple steps worth of a process to get the right crackle finish. And if you screw it up, the crackle doesn't look right. It either looks like veins or just doesn't look like anything. So it's very detailed work, very, very monotonous work for the person who has to do this all themselves. But I greatly appreciate the work that they're doing, because, I mean, it looks like I'm holding exactly what Christopher Eccleston held within that episode, you know, his original season. I couldn't be happier with it. It's just a perfect replica.
Okay. James, any questions on that?
I'm afraid I don't really.
It's a comprehensive summary Brian's given.
I know, exactly.
I will say, actually, on the replica that James just got, which was the RB replica's Fourth Doctor Sonic Screwdriver, which is, in my eyes, it's a beautiful replica, because, like I said, trying to get proper measurements for it, at least to my knowledge, it is pretty difficult. I like his replica. I'm very happy with his replica. But there are certain things that need enhancing, such as the back of the emitter head. He made a nice replica bullet, but it has a different shape to it. It's actually a button magnet on the real thing, and I just went ahead and I did some upgrades to mine to enhance that. So one of the other things that I like about prop collecting is not just getting this work that somebody else has put into it, but sometimes it's a little fun to upgrade and personalize your pieces as well. I don't seem to have to do that to the Celestial Toy Store models, because they do seem to be so spot on, but with other replicas, when you're working off of very little source material, the more that you find out after the product essentially is already in your hands, you can have that fun customizing and, like I said, putting your own personal touch on. I have a John Pertwee one coming to me as well, which I actually was made by RB Replicas, and then I had a friend of mine go ahead and put on some more detailing on it, which was just recently discovered within the last couple of years, I guess I'll say. And my God, it's gorgeous. I can't wait to get that and show that one off, to be honest. So it's fun. It's fun. It's fun to play with them. It's fun to play around with the look of them, and it's just fun to have them. It's like we were talking about before. It's that childhood dream kind of thing. Like, we didn't have these when we were a kid. We couldn't have these when we were a kid. You know, we would have had plastic toys if we were children and they were around when we were children. We wouldn't have had these. These are like big kid toys, and they're fantastic.
Do you carry it with you, or do you leave it on a mantelpiece?
I'll be honest, I do both. obviously, with the cosplaying, I always carry the Tenant one around with me because when I'm in costume, I carry it around. But there have been moments where you hang out with certain people that you know are going to get a kick out of it. You want to carry it around. But also, once you get them in your hand, you know, once they come in the mail after waiting, because and I'll tell you, like, one thing, when Celestial Toy Store put this up as a pre-order, it took a long time from pre-ordering it till actually getting it in your hands. And reason being was because he's not going to give you an inferior product. He's going to make sure that everything within it works the way that it should. And he had some initial issues with the wiring, the internal wiring, that he completely then scrapped and went with an electronic rail system, which actually is really smart and works very well for the piece. So it took a little while to get it. So when you wait that long for this piece and you get it in your hands, you don't want to stop playing with it. I mean, to this day, I still have them on a mantelpiece right now, but I still, you know, every day there isn't a day that goes by that I don't make play around with one of them just because they're too fun to have still. But that initial day you get it, you do carry it around for a little bit and you know, try to sonic doors and such.
My wife's like that.
Yeah, it's fun. Oh, I also did get the Universal Remote Control by the Wand Company, which is a 10th Doctor version. And that's a lot of fun to play with. I have to say, you know, comparing it to something like the Celestial Toymaker version, which I have, the measurements are very, very similar. You know, it may be slightly less detailed in certain areas because they had to change a couple things due to being like a mass-produced product and the handle being plastic versus metal. You know, but it, in a sense, it's got some cheaper parts, I guess, if I want to say it that way. But, you know, it's the way that it's made. It doesn't really suffer too much from it. It's a lot of fun. You know, I've used it on my TV a couple of times, but more so it has 10 different sound effects, which are a lot of fun to play with. And you know, everybody that comes here that generally goes through the Sonic collection or my Doctor Who collection, they really enjoy playing with that one just for the different sound effects. But it is a lot of fun to actually be able to change the channel or turn the TV off and on or the volume or something like that with the sonic screwdriver actually doing something for real. So that's another nice piece for the price. Certainly a very nice piece.
Okay, cool. Okay, then. Well, that, I don't think any other podcast could possibly offer such an in-depth look at these amazing reproductions. So thank you, Brian, for that.
Happy to talk about it.
Good. I thought you might be. Okay, and that dear listener, was basically because we talked about video games earlier, and Brian doesn't like video games, so we had to balance things out. It's an appeasement policy. Far more successful, I think, you'll find than Neville Chamberlain's. That's a history joke. Okay. So we've done Brian's new Sonic. Right, we're going to do recommendations in a minute. However, regular listeners will recall a few weeks ago I had a little bit of a rant about the Doctor Who figurine collection and their lateness with sending me the various pieces. And I think it's probably fair to say that since then they've kind of redeemed themselves. Paint job on the 11th Doctor wasn't great. Davros was a little iffy, but the others, the Silurian, the Ice Warrior in particular, the Cyberman, a Cybers variety, the Time War Dalek, Weeping Angel and the Sontaran have all been really good. And it strikes me that what is easy to do is things that don't have human faces. Their 10th Doctor isn't bad, but his face is a bit in shape, seems to be a bit pointy and closer to the 11th Doctor. But on the whole, his paint job isn't bad. However, and you'll be able to see the accompanying link here in the show notes to my Facebook post about the quality of work on the police box, which arrived, materialized, ho ho ho, this past weekend. And, you know, as I've just pointed out, that from what I can see, objects are easier to reproduce, cast, and paint than characters with human features. That doesn't seem to be the case with the police box, which is. It's just disappointing, basically. The paint job, the blue's okay, but there's strange kind of shiny bits on it. Some sort of varnish or finishing product hasn't been applied correctly. There is the transfers are wonky. They're slightly off of their positioning. and perhaps you might be able to excuse that if it wasn't for the fact that the windows are so horrendously painted. They look as if they've been painted by a five-year-old on crack. I don't. It's really not good enough at all.
Stop. Let's just stop and let's just take that image for a second. Just take it in. Sorry, now carry on.
Okay, carry on. It really is not good enough at all. And I've been a little bit guilty about this because they're supplying James Whittington with free copies. I bloody hope they're free anyway. For review purposes. So, we're reviewing these models, and on the whole, generally speaking, they are good. But as is the nature of these things, when something is not done properly, it looks horrendous. And this is the case with my particular police box. Now, I'm not asking for freebie. I'm not asking for Dot 2 Figurine Collection publishers to send me a repaired police box. What I'm hoping for is that I've got the worst one and that everyone else has got a perfect one. Because if that is not the case, then they've got a problem, basically. Opinions, James and Brian.
What I was going to say was that tends to be exactly how it is within the prop world. You know, if one detail is off or blotchy, it really affects the overall design. And from what I can tell from the photos of that TARDIS that you had, the basic design, the basic shape is good. If they had just taken more care with the details, that would have actually been a nice piece. And it's kind of like we were talking about before with the other figurines. You know, like you said, they seem to really nail the monsters pretty well.
Yeah.
So it is kind of sad to hear that that's the quality of them. And I do wonder. I mean, are they machine painted? Are they hand painted?
Oh, they've got to be hand painted. They've got to be hand painted. From what I recall, they're hand painted. I mean, the Ice Warrior, for instance. I'm just looking at the Ice Warrior now, and it's from Cold War, and you know, he's painted a kind of just slightly metallic green. He's got some lighter green portions on the back, but he's also been brushed over with a sort of a copper brass finish. And it looks really, really good. It may not be completely authentic to the TV version, because there wasn't really an opportunity for kind of that slightly shiny, brownish, goldish tinge to it with all that low lighting and that. But it's a really, really good figurine. And when you're talking about the eyes and the mouth, the painting is perfect. It hasn't gone over any of the lines or anything like that. And then, you know, I got that out of the box before I got the police box out. So I was expecting good things when the police box came out. There you go. Maybe I should have opened them in a different order.
It's a shame because you know, in a sense, you could afford to do a slightly naff Ice Warrior, but not really a naff TARDIS, given the TARDIS carries so much more of an iconic and personal preference. I think to a lot of people, I think a lot more people are TARDIS fans than they are Ice Warriors.
Yeah.
So yes, it was out of the two, it was the wrong one to do badly. It sounds like probably the materials given to the painters to mask specifically were very poor.
Yeah.
Or substandard.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Looking at the photo, I did actually wonder if they even masked off the area, because it doesn't look like it. It looks like they're hand painted. You know, and the brush just kind of went where it went. Aside from that, like you had mentioned on Facebook, you had aligned your photo with the bottom of the door panel panes so that we could actually see not just how far off the St. John's badge was off, which you could have taken that at any angle and you could have seen how far off that was. Was the actual sign, door sign itself, was also misaligned.
Yeah.
And, you know, I understand, you know, I've done a couple model work or little detailed stickers like that, and I can understand having a slight misalignment because they're small and not exactly easy to work with. And I don't exactly know the proper scale of this one, to be honest, since I've not seen one in person. But that doesn't seem like it's that hard to get close enough to write, you know?
It's just a little bit shorter. Oh, no, it's right. The main body, right, the whole thing with the lamp on top is just a little bit taller than my ninth Doctor figure.
Okay, yeah, that seems like that should not be that hard at all.
No. Yeah.
Painting the windows, who knows? I you know, painting by hand like that's very, very sensitive. If you've got shaky hands, you should be doing the job.
You know, if you're doing that for as a living, exactly, yeah, you should be able to do it.
Right, right,
yeah,
exactly. But the stickers, you know, the stickers, honestly, looking at the way they were, there should be no excuse, certainly at that scale.
Well, there must be those, I forgot the name of the stickers. I know you can make them these days with a printer in the right sort of paper, but, you know, if it's gone on a little bit wonky, you should just be able to, like, lift it up and then put it back down again until it's in the right place and then dab it to dry it off and secure it, shouldn't you? It's that kind of transfer. So, anyway, let's move on. Let's not be negative. It's Christmas. Hurrah! And it's recommendations time. So this is a good chance for you to, if you're stuck for a Christmas gift for yourself or a friend who likes Doctor Who, to think of something. Or not think of something, because we're going to do the thinking for you. We're going to give you recommendations. So, Brian, your turn first.
For me, since I've already recommended Legopolis recently, am going to say I have been listening to Paul McGann's season 4 with Big Finish.
Okay.
Which is Lucy Miller and his new companion Tamsin Drew. And when I first heard it, I don't remember being overly enamored with Tamsin. I kind of thought, you know, and when you listen to the story, you kind of understand that she's not really going to be a proper full-on companion, but she is a proper companion in the story, but she's not going to be like a long-term one like Lucy or Charlie was. Right. So you kind of get that sense. But when I originally listened to it, I was kind of thinking like, yeah, okay, where's Lucy? You know, because it's a shame, like this one's okay, but whatever. But my second time going through these, I'm really enjoying them, and I'm really enjoying what they're doing with her and the different things that they're doing from Charlie and Lucy to Tamsin, and where they're taking her particular story as well as Lucy's story and just the overall story. So season 4 is a lot better than I remembered it. Not that I ever thought it was a bad season. It's just a lot better than I remembered it. So much so that, to give you an idea, I was only going to listen to one episode. I felt like just hearing one particular episode. Right. And after it ended, I just let the iPod play into the next episode and then the next episode. And this is generally, I listen generally on my ride into work. So I've listened to about 4 or 5 of them now, just doing that, just continuing to let the next one play, which just felt so natural rather than going, oh, that's good. I finished that story. I can move on to something else now. So it's been a very enjoyable season 4.
Okay. Well, that's good news. So that's your recommendation for this week.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Who plays Tamsin Drew?
Unfortunately, I don't know her name offhand, but I can
look
it up for you.
Classic, what monsters can we look forward to? Any classic ones? Or?
Yeah, you have actually the Daleks, you have the Ice Warriors. What else have I come up with? I think most of it... Oh, the Return of the Monk, which is great, because they kind of make him grow up a bit, which is cool, and they actually have him acknowledge as such, which is another little fun thing. So those three for sure. I'm hard pressed to remember if anything else was in there because I think a lot of it was kind of some newer themes. But yeah, and they handled all of them well. I thought they did a really good job. I actually particularly liked the way the Ice Warriors were used.
Okay. Cool.
And I'm still cheating right now to find out who plays Tamsin because Big Finish really changed their website around on me. Here we are. Eighth. Nikki Wardley.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Excellent. All right. James.
She's nice.
Is she nice? Is she?
Yeah, she's nice. Met she's her? Fun. I'm sorry, but there you go. I have not met her, but I mean, no. As an actress, she's nice.
All right,
in the
okay.
role. I think she does well.
Cool. Okay. James, recommendation from you.
I've two things I've been listening to this week. I listened to Big Finish's The Church of the Crown, which is one of their older ones in the range with Peter Davison and Sarah Sutton.
Okay.
And would I recommend it?
I don't know. That's the point.
I don't know. Well, I'm mulling this with my point. Yeah, well, I'm glad you made that clear to me because I wasn't quite sure what I was going to be recommending it for. So it'd make a pretty good table mat.
Okay, but so you didn't enjoy it that much?
It would make a very poor shield in battle. What? No, I didn't massively, to be honest. That sounds a bit cruel. I think it's an example of how the range has got so much more confident since earlier days. It's not a bad episode. If you're interested in the Three Musketeers and the sort of 70s, sort of slightly 70s feel parody thereof,
right,
then go for it. But I found the humour didn't really work for me. it didn't quite hold together, but there are some nice moments in there. So it's certainly one that if you're into that sort of genre and you're a Peter Davison fan, I would check it out. Perry's good in it. She does two characters and she plays them very well.
And which episode, which story was this again?
Church in the Crown.
Church in the Crown?
Yeah. So yeah, I'd say yeah, might be worth having a look. Mosey on down if you're into that sort of thing.
Okay.
And the other thing I'm still reading Byzantium, which I'm still thoroughly enjoying.
Is there an exclamation mark in that?
There is indeed.
Thought there was.
At the very end, Byzantium, and it's a very odd story because it's technically set before the Romans. It's trying to bridge a gap which didn't really need to be bridged between the TARDIS falling off at the beginning and then being in the villa in the next scene. Especially because the tone is very different. It's a very dark and quite gnarly story, as so many of the book ranges were, which, of course, now we have to wonder whether they're canon at all. But it's still very good. Some very interesting things in it. You can get it on Kindle, because that's where I got it.
Okay.
It's on the Amazon. It's an Amazon market for quite a good price. What is interesting in it is that it fleshes out the characters in ways which are very much like the books do. And sometimes you're not... Now I'm so used to the new series, I'm so used to Big Finish, the sort of fleshing out doesn't sit as well with me. Ian Chesterton will talk about the days when he would get drunk and, or, you know, he'd be at university or some time doing, so I think he might mention doing military service, and same with Barbara, with these sort of similar things. The one time she got drunk and was wandering home by herself and never again. And it's stuff that you just don't really put with those characters, but was really good at the time in the 90s where you had no Doctor Who. And suddenly there was this range of books that was sort of making it grow up as you were growing up. And sort of saying, hey, you know, what could we really see with these characters? Where can we take them? And Byzantium is a very good blend of keeping it quite traditional in some respects, but pushing the boundaries again. Whether they push them too far for the individual, I don't know. But that's really what Doctor Who's about, isn't it? It's about trying to do different things. So, yes, two different things. And I would certainly recommend Byzantium, I think, over The Church and the Crown.
Okay, well, that's good. Right, okay. So, and I think we have my turn now for a recommendation.
Yes, your turn.
Yeah. Do you know? Well, I think my recommendation can have to be Doctor Who Legacy because it's all I've been doing for the past week. Outside of work, I've been trying to break through. I've only got to I haven't got very far through it at all. I've only unlocked six characters, and I'm kind of stuck with Weeping Angels in New York because the idea of the game is that it runs backwards from Series 7, so from the end of Series 7. So I haven't even got. I've only just got to, you know, the first half, the end of Series 7A. I haven't got very far through it at all. But then again, I'm not an expert on puzzly crystal games. So I suppose I should recommend that. However, I'm also, because it's Christmas, and I may have done this last year, but I'm doing it again, I'm recommending Terry Pratchett's The Hogfather, the TV adaptation, the TV movie, which has a wonderful cast. David Warner's in it. Ian Richardson is Death. David Jason's in it, if you like David Jason. Mark Warren is in it. And the lady whose name escapes me, Michelle Dockery, who most people watching Downton Abbey, she's also in it. And it's just great fun. And they've done three, and Going Postal is very, very good and probably the closest to any of the three books. But The Hogfather is The Hogfather, so it's certainly worth watching if you haven't
I always thought David Jason would have been a good Sylvester McCoy Seventh Doctor.
Did you?
Yeah, I thought he could have done the Seventh Doctor very well.
David Jason always seems to be David Jason to me.
I don't think you can say that. It's not very fair. You take his Frost character, for instance. All right, you take Del Boy.
Latterly, David Jason always seems to be David Jason to me.
Well, yeah. I was, you know, it was his Frost which made me think Frost he could probably do quite a good, quite a good somber Seventh Doctor. But I don't know. I've been listening to a lot of the Christmas. I've been watching, shall I say. A lot of the variations on A Christmas Carol.
All right.
Which is quite interesting.
Have you watched the Michael Caine one yet?
No, I haven't.
I've watched a few times this week.
Watched the early 80s one, the 70s one, early 70s. The 80s one's got fantastic Marley, creepy as hell.
Right.
And it's 1951 one. And it's just very interesting to see the sort of slight differences and nuances. Mm. And then, well, I have to say, all of them are fantastic in their own way.
I think Michael Caine was probably the best one, though.
It's a very nice way to sort of get into the season, isn't it?
It is, yes.
And the Christmas Carol. And it's nice to embrace the season.
Yes. I should also add, perhaps, maybe this is a little bit self-indulgent, but if you're interested in the state of the British country and you want to know exactly what David Cameron is going to do about it, there's an interesting new book on Amazon by Mr. Mick Karma called How to Run a Country, Everything You Need to Know About Managing a 21st Century Utopia, for just £4.99. And it's also by a Mr. David Cameron. So there you go.
No, right. So Mr. David Cameron's helped write the book?
Presumably. I couldn't tell you that much about it because obviously I haven't written it. I don't know anything about it. But, you know, it is a guide. It says everything you need to know about managing a 21st century utopia. So, you know.
So has he... It might be a good idea if he read the book then.
If I've read the book... Well, I may have read.
He should read the book.
He should read the book. He probably should. Apparently, there's a lot of space for you to make your own notes in there. Read into that what you will, dear listener.
That's interesting. David Cameron, of course, I think as mentioned before, appears in the Dalek Invasion of Earth novel.
Does he really?
Yeah. Susan marries him. They changed the name for the novelization to David Cameron.
Yes, you did. Yes. Oh, I'm delighted things are going to get so good for him. So that satirical note brings us to the end of this week's Castorbis podcast with a K. I think we'll be back next week, and then we might get a bit creative on your asses and record two. And then we'll pretend that we're here the week after, but actually won't be. So until then, it's goodbye. So there you go.
There we go.
There you go. Any suggestions that this is a book that's completely full of lined paper are entirely I couldn't answer them at all. I don't even know who Mick Karma is. Never met him.